Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype, and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're taking a special look at the theme of artificial intelligence, from the potential impact of smart automation to the way that robotics and humanoid creations can engage with, respond to, and maybe even seek to actively replicate human emotions and cognitive processes. We'll hear from some of the leading practitioners and experts in the areas of robotics and AI, and reflect on the role that many of these trends will play in powering the so-called fourth industrial revolution. Experts from UBS will help place the technologies and the developments in an investment context, as well as explaining how the opportunities inherent in smart automation might outweigh any associated risks. Now, the earliest emotion-relevant work in AI dates back to the 1970s, when cognitive science rather came of age as a discipline, inspired in part by the work of Nobel Economics laureate Herbert Simon. We start today's program by hearing some of those scientists who are very much in the vanguard of the discipline today. Nardia Manyur-Natalman is a professor at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, working on virtual worlds and social robots. She's particularly celebrated for her work on Nadine, one of the most realistic humanoid social robots ever developed. Nadine looks and acts in an incredibly lifelike way, maybe not surprising given that she's modeled on none other than Professor Tomlin herself. We spoke to Nardia about Nadine and about her work more broadly. We began by asking her whether she starts the development process by looking at emotions and working back, or starting with a technology and working forward. Nardia explains that it's very much a question of doing these things in parallel.
We are working first for a human. It's a bit like a human to understand the situation. A human has to be able to recognize the surrounding world and then recognize people, recognize their gestures. And in the same time, once the robot or virtual human recognize many signals, then they have to be analyzed by the robot, and the robot has to take a decision and react. And now the robot has a personality, mood, and emotions. And of course, depending on what we say in the interaction, the robot will go to the emotional module, analyze what is being said and what it means in terms of emotions, and reply in a way that the gestures are correct, the expressions are correct, and of course, what the content of the answer is correct.
Professor Hiroshi Ishiguro is director of the Intelligent Robotics Laboratory, and that's part of the Department of Systems Innovation in the Graduate School of Engineering Science at Osaka University. Professor Ishiguro explains the complexities of the ways in which AI helps to understand emotions.
My android can have good human-like facial expression. It's quite emotional. Then the android can communicate, interact with the people by using emotional expressions. But however, you know, what we don't know is what is real emotion. So we don't know what is real emotion for the humans. What is the mechanism for or making the emotional behaviors. I mean, representation is easy, but the deepest aspect of emotion is still is unknown. However, I think the same thing happens for the young children. So young children, in the beginning, they don't understand the real meaning of emotions. Then, you know, after growing, they can understand the, you know, what is sad, what is happy, right? Then how to represent the happiness with the facial expressions and what kind of effect the that happiness, happy feelings they give to the to my to own self or you know, other people.
So in short, what's the nature of robots' understanding of human emotions?
Technically, robot can use the emotional representation expressions, but we don't know, the scientists, still we are investigating this, studying the deepest aspect of emotions. What emotion is, still this is the open question.
Hiroshi Ishiguro there. Dr. Lola Canamero's research centers on the study of adaptive intelligent behavior, which she's exploring with artificial autonomous creatures. She focuses on motivated behavior and social interactions. We asked Lola, too, to explain in a little bit more detail about the processes involved.
The approach I take is Oracle embodied artificial intelligence, and we take inspiration from biological systems, humans and other animals. And we're interested in both things, actually. We're interested in trying to build models that can also help to understand how emotions and intelligence work in us, and how we can use those to build better robots. Better means that, on the one hand, they can interact with humans in a way that is more acceptable for us, and on the other hand, that they can be more efficient at what they do in a way, or more flexible in the ways they do things. For example, taking the decisions in environments where there's a lot of unexpected circumstances, or unknown environments, for example.
Why is all of this so significant from an investment perspective? Kiran Ganesh is a cross-asset strategist at UBS. He explains the importance of the sector and how it fits into the bigger picture of a fourth industrial revolution.
Started out as something that was confined to the sort of technology space, but it's increasingly starting to affect more and more of the areas that we look at. So everything from the way that industrial companies are acting to financials, obviously the tech sector, but it is becoming a more widespread theme, particularly as this sort of automation and disaggregation starts to spread through the labor force.
Sandeep Gontori in the UBS Wealth Management CIO office in Singapore is a director and equity analyst covering the global tech sector. He and his colleagues wrote a longer-term investment advisory document back in February on the theme of automation and robotics. He explains why this area and this thinking is so exciting.
Automation is part of the fourth industrial revolution. And clearly, if we go back to the history and look at the previous three revolutions, I think what automation is going to do is it's actually going to provide a level playing field for emerging market countries and also allow them to compete with developed market economies. So if we look at our report, what we expect in terms of automation, the addressable market right now is around $150 billion globally, which is around 1% penetration of the global manufacturing industry. We think that this industry will grow in high single digits over the next decade, which means this segment will be one of the fastest growing segments both in the industrial and IT sector. So we are pretty excited about the automation growth prospects for the next decade.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the impact that cutting-edge research and technology in the AI space will have on the wider world. We'll ask the scientists whether robots will one day be able to display truly human cognitive functions, and we'll get the investor view. Let's look to the future now. Robots already have the capacity to learn, to accumulate information and experiences that inform their patterns of behavior. But are we closer to the day when robots or AI can display something closer to the true cognitive function of people? Could they soon demonstrate self-reflectiveness? Could they seek to self-improve? Lola Caminero explains that in this space, biology is her inspiration.
We're actually working on those elements already. I mean, just the beginning, but along with learning as such, some of us are working on what we call developmental robotics, and we take inspiration from the way infants develop so that they grow their cognitive skills, the motor skills, the emotional skills. And we're modeling some of those aspects in robots, for example, how motor skills develop through interaction with the environment, motor babbling, and then interaction with humans improves that. And it's not only they learn about the world, but the cognitive and motor emotional skills improve themselves. So we are starting to work on that. It's obviously a long way to go.
We asked Hiroshi Ishiguro, too, about the potential for human cognitive functions to be replicated in humanoids and by AI.
I think it's possible in the near future. But of course, we don't give unlimited abilities to the robot. You know, we want to limit the function for running, right? So, you know, because of our safety, I guess it's possible, right? And we can develop the kind of greedy android for the knowledge, I think that is the possibility of a computer or artificial intelligence. But at the same time, you know, we want to consider about this, how to keep the safety in the society.
And what of the future and the impact on the real world of all of the advances in AI and smart automation spaces? Nardia Taman again.
It's an intermediate, it's a mediator between ourselves as a human and the machines, because actually we have to adapt so much to machine. And when you have Nadine, she looks like us, she behaves like us, but she is a computer. So in fact, she's the best person to make the two worlds in one entity. And we can see her in many places, you know, because Nadine is a computer, so she could be empowered to all kind of things. For example, for all age people as a companion, to observe what they do, to dialogue, to read stories. But actually, in our place, she has started her job as a receptionist. So you see, she could also be a receptionist, or if she can grasp objects, be very much aware around the virtual, the real world, that she can act as a waiter or help in a restaurant. It's a lot of capacity, because you can talk to her like a human, I mean, almost.
According to Lola Caminero, when it comes to the broader impact on the real world, health and healthcare provision are key areas.
There are many potential applications, but at the moment we are doing a lot of work in the health area. So trying to build robots that support people in different ways, other assistive robots for home or in hospitals, or the robots that try to model, for example, these cognitive dysfunctions and try to test hypotheses that psychologists or neuroscientists have, and we cannot study very systematically in humans, so we try to model that. But we are putting a lot of effort in building robots that can support well-being and health of people. There's, of course, industrial applications and many, many others, but health is a big area at the moment.
And what of other applications, other sectors too, beyond the service sector? Areas such as industry and manufacturing, they're absolutely primed to reap the benefits, so says Nardia Taman.
If we have, we have robots that have to communicate with humans in a manufactory, Nadine can be empowered with all kind of functionalities. On the long run, you won't have the functional robots and the social robots. You will have a mixture of them if it's necessary. So if in a factory you need robots that can do things, but in the same time has to communicate with real people, as I said, they are mediators, so they will be needed.
Hiroshi Ishiguro talks about the potential applications of his work and where prospective deployments of the tech may occur. Are they likely to be felt more profoundly in business, in other interactions? What's the potential for your work and your world?
Goal is to understand the human itself. So if we create a very human-like robot, so we can touch to the very philosophical the questions about the humans. For example, what emotion is, what feeling of presence is, and what mind and heart consciousness. So I believe we can understand these important things for the humans through the development of a very human-like robot. So that is, you know, my basic motivations. But of course, you know, we can consider the practical applications. For example, we can use our very human-like robot as a receptionist or newscaster and weather reporters and rakugo players. You know, rakugo is a comic storyteller. And, you know, we can consider the many purpose, right? So for simple, you know, interactive communicative service, we can replace with the Android.
In the longer term, a key worry and a recurrent narrative in this space is the potential impact on employment of many of these advances. Plainly, there's an issue around changes to productivity. Therefore, there are inherent risks, but there are also incredible opportunities, so says Sandeep Gantori.
We think that automation, particularly in terms of artificial intelligence, will replace some of the low and mid-end jobs, particularly in the knowledge worker industry. So for example, filing some basic insurance claims, or going to a bank for a basic transaction, I think you can do with some basic artificial intelligence stuff out there. But what it also allows is that artificial intelligence will create a lot of other jobs, particularly in the creative space. So net-to-net, what we think is that artificial intelligence is a slight risk for the global employment, But in the process, we think that the overall productivity will also increase, and we think the jobs will create or shift towards to the more creative stuff. And if I have to size the overall impact as far as the knowledge worker industry, now McKinsey puts that the total global workforce in the knowledge worker industry is around 230 million. That's around 9%. Maybe artificial intelligence will impact some of the jobs out there, but equally, what we have seen over the many years or with the previous industrial revolutions is that artificial intelligence will also improve productivity and will create jobs in some other new areas.
And finally, let's take stock from the investor viewpoint. What are some of the short-term and medium-term implications of the so-called fourth industrial revolution? Are there sector-specific issues? Or is all of this demonstrative of a broader widening of the ambit of the investable areas? Here's Kiran Ganesh again.
From a traditional standpoint, as I said, we think that the emerging markets are likely to be suffering from this trend relative to the developed markets. So we think that this could extenuate the trend we've seen in recent years, whereby we see just on this basis alone, there's sort of developed markets starting to perform better than some of the emerging markets. Obviously, as I said, some companies which are innovating in this field are likely to be major winners relative to those who are not. Potential efficiency gains from some of this new technology are pretty huge. So we could expect to see some of those sort of more innovative companies performing more strongly than those which are not. In terms of whether it opens up the investment universe more, I think will very much depend on how some of these new companies begin to structure themselves. If there is major success, then they are likely to obviously list and potentially see more public investment. But so for the moment, there's obviously a lot of private capital that's gone into this new field. But we'll see in a few years' time as to whether this opens up further.
And that's Kiran Ganesh bringing us to the end of this 89th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. This special exploration of the worlds of AI, automation, and robotics was brought to you as ever by Monocle 24, alongside T-Brand Studio, MediaVest, and of course, UBS. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up on the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. We'll be right back.